out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 15th of May 2019, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com. Well, we've reached halfway through the week. It's Wednesday. That means we must have revisionist historian Carolyn Yeager with us today from carolynyeager.net. Carolyn, how is life over in Texas?
It's going along just fine. Nice weather. As a matter of fact, since you bring it up, we've had quite a lot of rain so far this spring, and the weather's been really mild. And for the past 4 years, we've had mild summers, which is great. You know, I mean, it doesn't get too hot too long. So I don't know if there's a whole weather change, but if it stays like this in Texas, I'll like it.
Ideal. It's a beautiful sunny day here as well. And unfortunately, I haven't been able to check out your website recently. I know you've got some new content up there, and I know you're getting close to the end of the Fatherland series. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that and what you've been looking at over the last week over there?
Yeah, I've just been really focused on this Fatherland series, particularly since at one point I couldn't reach it, and I thought maybe they had blocked me for some reason, but because I couldn't imagine that they would go offline, but they obviously did. Probably were doing some work on the site because it was late in the evening, kind of late. And the next morning, well, it came up again. So I was so relieved, but I was thinking, oh gosh, you know, I wanted to finish this. And if I can't get to it anymore, I'm going to really be so disappointed. So now it turns out that I am coming to the end. I probably have two more material for two more postings, and then maybe I'll do something summing up or talking about World War One or something after that. But it goes until the last issue that was named The Fatherland came out on February 7th. 1917, and I'm now into January material from January 1917, and the last thing I have posted here is really interesting article written by my favorite writer there, Frederick Franklin Schrader, who was a co-editor with George Sylvester Viereck in the beginning for about 10 months, 12 weeks or so. I don't know. And then he stopped being an editor, but he continued to be a writer. And I also like that Von Mack, but they haven't been having anything by him lately. He was writing a great big book, and it did come out. So he was my favorite. But then this Schrader is also really, really good. And he wrote this exposure of the Philippine War because, you know, the English had been, continually focus on trying to make Germany out to be, committing atrocities of one kind or another. And then they had all those Belgian atrocities, Sven, in the beginning, and that went on for a long time. And then that finally was shown, a lot of it, to be false, and finally that was getting across to the public, and the interest in that had died down. And then now in Well, this one is actually December 1916. And at the end of 1916, the Germans came up with this thing to take a lot of Belgian men to Germany to work, because they needed workers. They had so many of their own men fighting in the war, and they volunteered. They weren't forced. You know, everybody wanted, in Germany, they all wanted to go and fight in order to save Germany. And so they needed workers. See, again, a parallel to World War II. I mean, almost, it just amazes me how what we're so familiar with in World War II occurred in the same way in World War I. But most of us aren't that aware of it. They tried to turn this, and they were going to be paid. They had all these Belgian men unemployed, and Belgium was depending on charity, and the Germans had to pour a lot of money in there, and other countries sent charity and so on. But that's not ever enough, you know, for you. So they said they were going to, you know, but a lot of Belgian men volunteered. They wanted to go to Germany and work, and they were going to be able to come back and see their families on a regular basis, and they were going to be able to write to them and get mail from them, and so all this stuff, you know. And yet, so then of course Britain portrayed it as a forced slavery, and they were taking these poor Belgians, and now how much more could they do to them? Now they're enslaving them and forcing them to work in Germany. Well, they did, you might say, force some of them, but a lot of them were willing to go, and the conditions were fine, and you know, they had something to do because they were just sitting around doing nothing. They had a big meeting, the pro-British element in the United States, which was Elihu Root, was a big figure in that. And they had this big meeting to condemn Germany for this terrible, what they called the crimes of the Imperial German government in its treatment of the Belgian people, and calling it forced deportation to Germany to work, do slave labor. And it was a big, big meeting in Carnegie Hall. Well, our writer, Frederick Schrader, he discovered this exposure of the American conduct in the Philippine War. And it was a bunch of documents, you know, that nobody had paid any attention to for a while, I guess. And he published a long article based on those documents and what the way, and it's known, you know, now, I mean, the terrible way the American troops treated the Filipinos and the horrible war they conducted, very similar to the worst kind of things we ever heard about Vietnam, you know, in the way they just destroyed the country and burned up whole villages and made people homeless and they died and all that. So that's what this last one is. And I've got a number of other articles lined up for my next one. And then I realized that I must be coming to the end. Well, it turns out that the end was sooner than I expected, that it was February 7th, as I started to say, that Wilson announced in Congress a break in official relations with Germany. He announced this on 3rd of February, 1917. 3rd February, 1917. So now he had just been inaugurated in January, I would suppose, from the election in 1916. He was reelected. And I did write about that, too, previous to this last one. And then, at least the articles from the Fatherland. And then already on 3rd February, he came up with a pretext of being unhappy with Germany, because Germany, I guess, had sent a note. Germany had decided to kind of step up its submarine war in order to bring an end to the war. And they used that along with a few other things they came up with. So they broke official relations with Germany on 3rd February. And that's very serious. That's when you give the ambassador from Germany to the U.S., you hand him his passports, meaning you tell him he's no longer welcome in the country. So you kick out the German ambassador and his whole staff, and you close down the embassy, and you don't have any official relations anymore. So that was very serious. And so this was the last fatherland issue named fatherland was February 7th. And then on February 14th, the paper that came out had a new title and a new type of front page called The New World. That was the new name of it. And because they thought, you know, that, of course, rightly, that they didn't want to be accused of being traitors and treason and so on, they didn't want to use the name Fatherland anymore. Because if we had broken off our relations, and, you know, German Americans in the U.S. shouldn't be thinking in terms of Germany being their fatherland. And it was only in early April that Wilson asked the Congress to declare a war on Germany, and they did. And, you know, so the first issue of The New World on February 14th is in this archive at Villanova University, which is such a wonderful archive they have there. And but that's it. There's no more, because they only did the fatherland. And once it was no longer the fatherland, they don't have them there. So there's no place for me to find them. So this, you know, this is the end of my World War One series via the fatherland paper. And I'm kind of ready for it to be done, but it's been great. And I'm just so glad that I got this much of it as I did on my site. I didn't count up the number of posts based on it, but there's quite a lot of them.
Oh, you're lucky to have found all those fatherland ones. I mean, imagine if they weren't there. If they don't have the new world, at least you were able to read all the fatherland editions.
Yeah, I did read them all too. And then I took what I thought would be interesting and, you know, and make an impact. Well, because you can't just cover everything. But yes, it's it was just really lucky. You know, I got interested in this George Sylvester Viereck because he had come up in something I had been writing about with the American German-American people who prominent figures who stood up for Germany, and he was one of them, and he just really, really intrigued me. He really sounded great, because he had done this interview with Adolf Hitler in the early 30s or in the 20s maybe, early in Hitler's career, and I had found it and published it. So then I started looking for more about the fatherland. And when I found this archive, I thought, wow, I just so thrilled, really. And so I've been doing this. But I'll talk more about that next week. And we should probably get on to talking about this Poland story, which is very interesting to me.
Yeah, I've heard a few bits about this. I know that the Jews are basically trying to extort money from Poland, like they've extorted it from all these other countries for reparations for the war, seemingly forgetting that actually Poland was occupied by Germany. And I also hear that Poland have made a law to prevent, to actually make it illegal to say that Poland holocausted any Jews. And America's got really quite upset about this, and there's been protests. It's all been very interesting to read about. I know, I think there was a protest just recently as well, wasn't there?
Well, yes, that's what was in the news on Monday, that a Polish, they call him the far right, the Polish far right group, were out in the street rallying, complaining about this. And yeah, you're absolutely right in what you said. And so what started this latest thing is that the Polish foreign ministry had scrapped a planned visit of an Israeli delegation. Now, that's pretty serious. And the thing is that the delegation had already arrived in Warsaw. And then they had learned, but Poland, you know, they're kind of funny. Sometimes you have to really cheer them on, and other times you think, well, they need to take a little more responsibility for themselves. But they learned that the members of the delegation had changed from what it originally had been. And they thought that these were people who were going to try to force through talks on this restitution, a claim that Israel now has against Poland. I'll just start out with this comes from the United States State Department. You know, they're so, the State Department has been under the control of the Jews and Jewish interests for so long. But it also comes from Congress. State Department didn't dream this up, I don't think. But anyway, because it's a law, and the laws have to be passed by Congress. And they passed not long ago, but not just, you know, last week or anything, but a little while back, the United States Congress passed this Justice for Uncompensated Survivors Today, called JUST Act, JUST, which actually directs the State Department. That's what they do. They're always directing the State Department to report to Congress on how countries have progressed on the restitution of Jewish assets seized during and after the war, World War II. Now, we know that there's this special envoy to monitor anti-Semitism, whole department with the staff and all kinds of stuff in the State Department. But this is something else. Now, our State Department is expected to monitor all the countries in the world and see if they're following what Israel and what the United States obviously is supporting, that Jewish assets that supposedly were seized during the war and after the war be given back to the Jews who are claiming that they're theirs. This is, you know, I won't waste time going on about what a scam this all is, but anyway, this is our, and I don't, you know, I don't even blame the State Department or whoever is president. This is Congress passing this stuff all the time. And you know how our Congress is when it comes to Israel. Now, Poland's ruling white right-wing Law and Justice Party, which I have a few, I'm not a big admirer of, but they're better than the liberal opposition. But they were unhappy with this law, this JUST Act, but they have sought to downplay its importance, they didn't have to follow it and they weren't going to pay any attention to it. And not only the right wing in Poland, but, it even says that the centrist and liberal opposition agree with that. No one in Poland. Wants to pay attention to this, and it has any intention of giving any property to Jews who are claiming it, and they've been denying that all along. So a lot of people a whole lot of our people will say, well, good for Poland. They're standing up against the Jews. They should do that. But there's another aspect to it that that Poland is claiming a lot of money from Germany. You know, Poland is claiming compensation. They want money, and not just a few billion. The last I knew, they wanted €1 trillion. They said it'll probably be around €1 trillion. And now today I just read that it's going to be that this this Kaczynski, the head of the ruling party, says, it'll be several hundred trillion. Can you believe, how can it be several hundred trillion, he said, and euros? He didn't say zloty, the Polish money. I can't find that line there for some reason.
Well, maybe they're saying that because they know Germany aren't going to pay it. And that gives them an excuse to not pay the Jews, because this is what they've been saying.
Well, Germany's not going to pay it. Germany has no obligation to pay it. You know, legally, that was all settled. So here it is. Kaczynski said, addressing this Polish reparations demands on Germany, some countries west of Poland owe us hundreds of trillions of euros or more. Can you imagine? Hundreds of trillions. What is that? That is not even an amount anybody... There might not be that much money in the world. I don't know. This guy doesn't know what he's talking about. But
it's Jewish
at one
arithmetic.
Time,
that's what it is. Karen.
I thought it was too much when I read 1 trillion. You know,
Jewish arithmetic. That's what it is. It's Jewish arithmetic. They've taken a leaf out of the Jews' book and seen what they've been able to get away with Holocaust reparations, and they thought we'll try the same. We'll use their way
exactly
of adding up.
Right. And that's why I say, and I don't want to insult your listeners or anything, some of them, but, I do say that Poland is just more like the Jews than any other group of people I know. And, because the thing with Poland is that they always want to be given stuff. They play the victim, and they're fine with what they can get from other people, but they never will give anything to anybody. You know, they're tight as blazes when it comes to that. So that's just the way Poland is. They have a victim mentality. They believe that they believe in kind of focus on how they've been treated and how bad things have gone for them over the centuries, and that, well, they deserve some help. Well, they get a lot of help. They get a lot of help. You know that right after World War II, when Poland was in bad shape, but Germany was in worse shape, and this was like no later than 1948, Germans who were out there doing their best to pull their country back together and find something to do and stay alive and work and so on, they were sending, they had done so much better already, even occupied the way they were, than Poland, that they were sending lots of care packages. Germans were sending care packages to Poland because they believed that, you know, they believed all that propaganda, and so they were guilty of all this bad treatment of Poles, and they were trying to make up for it, and they were sending all these care packages to Poland when they could hardly, they didn't have enough for themselves, and Poland wouldn't even thank them. Didn't they took it, but they never, you know, said anything good about them for it, and that's just the way Poland is.
What about the occupation by the communists? What about the occupation by the communists, by the USSR? I mean, who gets restitutions for that? Does anybody get any compensation for that? No, they don't get any compensation for that.
No, right.
It's
nobody asked for that. Isn't that something?
Yeah. It's just
because they know they won't, they'll never give it to them. But they think Germany might, you know, because Germany is, you know, continues to be, including from the Soviet, from Russia, under this under this blood libel of that they're responsible for everything that happened, and also these exaggerated numbers of how many died and all of that. But you know, if Poland hadn't sought for war with Germany in the beginning in 39, Warsaw wouldn't have been destroyed. And if the Poles in 1944, I think it was, or was it 43, hadn't done their Warsaw uprising when they were under German occupation, then with the help of foreign interests, then Warsaw wouldn't have been bombed and destroyed the way it was, because Germany was determined to put that down. They weren't going to allow that, you know, and so and the Poles lost again. And now they want Germany to pay for, what used to be billions, now it's trillions of dollars in damages to Warsaw that had to be rebuilt and so on. And, you know, I mean, so while we're happy that Poland is won't give money to the Jews who are claiming it, they're not all very admirable themselves.
I'm not so sure that they're even taking it that seriously, because I know that at those protests there were people dressed up in red Indian headgear, and they were saying, we will pay the Jews when America pays the red Indians. So I don't think they are really expecting Germany to cough up that money. I think they're just saying, look, you say we owe you. Well, Germany owes us. Germany's not going to pay us, so why should we pay you? I think that's really what they're highlighting. I don't think.
Well, you know, using that America's pay the red Indians, they're then again, you know, they won't say that if America's always on Poland's side. But if America has passed this law and saying that everybody has to, they're not. It wasn't passed against Poland. It was said everybody has to do this, and that their State Department is supposed to enforce it. And so then now that pisses them off. So they say, well, you know, when you pay the Red Indians, we'll pay this. And they don't intend to follow it. But they also say things like, one of them said, if Germany gives us €1 trillion, we might. Now, I don't know who said that. I think somebody in the government said this. If Germany gives us €1 trillion, we might consider paying a few billion to Jews. And the Americans want to force us to pay those damages, which are simply illegitimate, said Adam Juracek, a driver from the southwest region of Silesia. So they're not happy with the Americans.
It's none of America's business, is it? I don't see how America can make it America's business to be like a bailiff.
I think that's awful too. You know, I just simply despise what our Congress does and all this catering to Jews and this thinking, making the U.S. the monitor of the whole world, and it's our responsibility to pay for all these programs that we're supposed to go around and enforce these laws about Jews. I don't understand at all. It's beyond my comprehension how our Congress people think. You know, I mean, I don't understand that. As much as I understand how people can get on one side or another, and I just don't. It's just so far out, you know.
It's a glorified Jewish bailiff. That's what America has been reduced to. Just a glorified Jewish bailiff to go around the world, checking that people aren't criticizing Jews, checking that they pay the Jews whatever money the Jews demand from them. And you, how do they work out all this money that they supposedly owed? Have they got receipts or
they don't. That's another thing that's come up. They don't have
any. Just pluck a figure out of the air, don't they?
They just, you know, say so. You know, it all comes from when you start a lie, like this lie that 3.5 million, it's not a lie, 3.5 million Jews lived in Poland, making up 10% before World War II. That's true. But then when you say more than 90% of them were killed in the Holocaust, that's not true. So, supposedly, Poland's got a lot of Jews who have converted, so to speak, to Catholicism, or call themselves, you know, change their names to Polish, to change their Jewish names to Polish names. And so you don't know. All these countries, all these European countries should stand up for Poland and say, no, this is wrong. They won't do it either. They won't do it.
Yeah, the funny thing is, if they think that they can say, oh, well, 90% of these Jews were wiped out, so whatever is left there, we want it for all the Jews that are around today. What about all these old white empires that we had, and they all got miscegenated out of existence? That means that everything that's there now, the pyramids, everything in Assyria, all of that, everything that's in Iraq, that should all be paid back to the white man. Because originally it was ours. And how far back does this logic go? This logic only ever applies to Jews. That's the thing. That's the point. It only
well,
ever applies to Jews.
You're being too logical. You're being too reasonable. You don't expect there to be anything like that.
Well, I hope they keep at it. I hope they don't buckle under. But it is fun. It is funny to
well,
see.
Well, they won't. I don't think they will.
It's great to see Israel
too.
Being told, so, you know, well, no, you can't come in. You can't have your meeting. I think that's wonderful. That is good on them. Anyway, thank you very much for coming on today, Caroline. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.